Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from none other than the Florida Space Coast, where we went from near winter temperatures just a few days ago, and here we are back to 80-plus degrees and humid. Amazing how that happens. But thank you for joining me today. I think this might be my most important episode of the year because of all of the hype surrounding this mysterious respiratory illness that is affecting dogs in various states, getting a lot of phone calls to the clinic. The doggy daycare next door, the owner came over. We have a really nice relationship with them. They're called Dogtopia. My dogs are members. She came over to talk to me about it. And, you know, there's just been a lot of concern. So I want to sift through what's true and what's not true and get you the real information. So please stay tuned and spread the word. Real quick, we got a listener email I'm going to get to in just a second. But we posted a poll. It was one of the cool things that I can do with my new Spotify platform. Posted a poll, which kind of pet do you prefer, dogs or cats? We had a whopping 2 participants. The poll proved that 100% of people prefer dogs, but there was only 2 participants. So we need a bigger pool of people to draw conclusions. So please participate. It's at the show page, at my Spotify page. So please visit the show page at Spotify and participate in today's poll. So maybe we can get more than 2. So today's poll is, do you keep your dog or cat on regular preventative medication? By preventative, I'm referring to flea, tick, heartworm. And it will be there at the show page, like I said. Please participate. I know there's thousands of you that listen. I'm sure we can do better than 2. So thank you so much. I look forward to the results of this poll, hopefully with a better sample size. So my first email, or my only email, is from Lynn. Lynn is a dear, dear, dear client of mine, so I'm so excited that she's listening. We go back, so many years. She shares my passion for Labrador Retrievers, so we always bond over that. Lynn is very unique in that her Labrador Retrievers are such perfect gentlemen because she does dog agility training with them. It's really cool to see. She shows me videos. Her last star was Wilson. Wilson is my delightful knucklehead who suffers from excessive happiness. It pulls me over when he comes in the exam room, but he's so sweet. It's perfect for agility because he's got a lot of energy. He's getting up there in years, and so we're having to dial it back a little bit. But at any rate, wonderful to hear from you, Lynn. Thank you for participating. Here's what she had to say. Dr. Roger, local client Lynn here. I almost said your last name. I don't do last names. I received the attached message from a mailing list and thought about our recent discussion regarding when to neuter my Labrador, Frank. She's got a new Labrador puppy named Frank. Love, Frank. I don't know whether you have seen the study in question, but I wanted to share with you in hopes of furthering everyone's understanding of the issue. I've recently discovered your podcast, so I'm enjoying it as well as learning from it. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Lynn, and Labrador's Wilson and Frank. So, so we did a podcast about this very topic and got some really good, pithy, not just opinions, but good information from a licensed veterinary technician and also an agility performance dog person. And she clued me on some pretty cool things. And one of them was this study that does involve multiple breeds. So I would say that the study is good information. I'll still stand by, for the most part, what my general stance is. Never neuter a spay south of 6 months. That just makes no sense to me. For your male dogs, get them as close to that 12-14 month threshold prior to neutering, as long as we're not getting unwanted male behavior that doesn't always go away post-neuter. Humping, aggression, trying to escape to go find a girlfriend, marking in the home, things like that. We start to see that the faster you nip that in the bud, the better. And Lynn, I have every confidence in the world that Frank is going to be a perfect gentleman like the rest of your dogs. And so if you want to get him to that threshold, certainly I would support that. And especially you're an agility trainer, so I have every confidence that you won't have an unruly dog and you wouldn't tolerate an unruly dog. So I would say that study is very good. So thank you for sharing. I did post a link at my last show page that actually got from that wonderful licensed technician that actually UC Davis, who did that study, posts breed recommendations as far as when to spay and neuter. And I think it's a really good guideline to go by. UC Davis is a phenomenal institution, and they're one of the leaders in the veterinary teaching hospitals or teaching situations that that actually do a really nice job of doing very important research. Thank you so much, Lynn, for your contribution. So good to know you're now our listener. It's funny, after all these years, you just now found out I have a podcast. I guess I don't really advertise it locally. I just hope people stumble upon it. I do post it at my professional Roger Welton DVM page. By the way, if any of you would like to friend me there, you can follow anything that I post. I don't like to get too boring at my personal private profile with all my veterinary stuff, so I save it all for my Roger Welton DVM page. So you can just, it's public, you can search for that, and I post my episode links there as well as my blog links and other cool stuff I find that is unique to veterinary. So let's get into our topic. So what's going on with this mystery respiratory disease? The direct answer to that is honestly not a whole lot. This thing has become like an animal unto itself. The media and social media platforms and the media in general have really just taken this thing to a heights that it doesn't deserve. But let's just get to the basic premise and what's going on. So specifically, New Hampshire, Illinois, Colorado, and Oregon, I want to say Washington State as well, are experiencing this uptick in respiratory disease cases that are beyond kennel cough. So kennel cough is going to be a gaggy, very throaty cough. You can hear them like a mile away. It almost sounds like they're trying to gag something up without success. And that's your typical kennel cough. That's caused by Bordetella bronchoseptica as well as adenovirus type 2 and parainfluenza virus. So we call that canine upper respiratory disease complex. It has a very hallmark presentation. Rarely affects the lungs in a healthy dog. The disease in question we're talking about is more like an influenza type presentation. So canine influenza, we've had a couple outbreaks here in Florida, 2015, 2018. There's current outbreaks right now in Minnesota and Oklahoma. That's going to be more of, they present sicker. This applies, by the way, to this new mystery illness, and I'm going to get to that in a second, but it's very influenza-like. So they're differently than kennel cough. It's more of a wet cough. Differently than kennel cough, they run a fever. Differently from kennel cough, there is a little bit more commonly lower respiratory involvement, so that would involve the lungs sometimes, but not always. So like a bronchitis, bronchial pneumonia, or pneumonia. Bronchopneumonia and pneumonia are going to be still pretty rare. Bronchitis is not that uncommon. So basically the dogs are a bit sicker. But overall, like influenza, I want to stress this, and I'm going to really stress this, mortality rates are very low. So yes, your dog gets sicker. Yes, there may be a hospitalization here or there to put the patient on fluids and IV anti-inflammatories and antibiotics just to give them a boost to get them on the road to recovery. But as far as dying from this thing, if you get veterinary care, it's going to be very highly unlikely that they're going to die from this. So that applies to canine influenza. It also very much applies to whatever this respiratory situation is in these various states. To my local Florida listeners, we've had none of this phenomenon, none of this syndrome, I'd like to call it, in the state thus far. So what's causing it? The bottom line is we don't know. I think jumping to the conclusion, though, that it is something that is a novel something or other, I think that's very premature, because it could be a combination of well-known established bugs that are maybe combining opportunistically to cause something worse than they would be individually. I'll give you a great example. In New Hampshire, there was some dogs that were cultured out with mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is a rare respiratory bacteria that you don't commonly see. It is treatable. So the conclusion was starting to be, oh, it's probably mycoplasma. Well, hundreds of other dogs cultured negative for it. So yet they had the same syndrome. So it's not mycoplasma alone. Yeah, that's a complicating factor in those particular dogs that cultured for it. But something else is going on. You know, maybe it's a parainfluenza virus. Maybe it's an influenza virus. Here's what we run into. We have two problems in veterinary medicine. We don't have a robust tracking system. Our tracking system really comes down to the owners that opt in for testing, and then it goes into a database. And that database tells us about disease distribution. So infectious disease distribution, the study of that is called epidemiology. On the human side, epidemiology is robustly done by the CDC, Centers for Disease Control. That's how we were tracking COVID, for example. And among other things, Ebola, whatever. The CDC watches these things like crazy. We don't have really a really good tracking system. So the AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, AHA, American Animal Hospital Association, they track this stuff. The USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, tracks this stuff. But we don't have a CDC that's like looking at these things unless there's a potential to jump species from dogs to us. So like if there's like an avian flu, yeah, the CDC is looking at that because it was an avian flu, meaning a bird origin, that likely caused the Spanish flu that wiped out all those people in the early 1900s. So that's something the CDC look at, but they don't care about this because people can't get it, at least as far as we know. So it could be a combination of things. The other problem we have in veterinary medicine, though, is people have to opt in to treat. So I want to give you a great example here. To test. So my last outbreak of influenza, 2018, was a little bit worse than the 2015, so I just saw more cases. And I would say to the folks, okay, well, I'd like to test for influenza. However, it takes a few days to get back, so I want to initiate treatment for flu in the event it is flu. Okay, well, if my dog comes back positive, is it going to change how you treat? And I would honestly say, no. Okay, so why am I going to spend $300 on a test just to treat my dog? And I'm like, okay, that's reasonable. Makes sense to me. So, you know, the people are not going to spend $300 if they don't have to. It's not going to change my treatment course. So then I started to change my stances. I got a no and a no and a no and a no. It's like, look, if you opt in, you help us epidemiologically track this thing. You're doing it good for society. You're doing good for the canine world. So we can manage this. And, you know, still, 3 out of 4 were like, no, just treat. So I got a few to test. But the bottom line is, if they don't opt in to test, you know, we're missing probably thousands of test subjects that we could gain more information from. And I'm not blaming the pet owners, man. You know, especially this time of year, we got holidays among us. It's the end of the year. Tax returns are still around the corner, you know, far around the corner, not till March. And so I understand opting out for testing. I'm not going to judge anyone for that, but just kind of let you folks know what we're up against. So do we have a new novel, whatever? I don't know. Nobody knows. And we may honestly never find out unless what this is a novel influenza strain. I could be pretty confident it's not the last two strains that we had outbreaks with, the 2018 and 2015 outbreaks, because we would know that by now. That's something that we're going to test against pretty quickly. So I think I don't say we can rule that out, but it's probably not those influenza strains. And so if it is influenza, it's something new. And so as soon as I know, I'm going to let all of you know. In the meantime, should you be really worried? I mean, it's always cause for concern when your pet could get potentially sick, but since they're not going to die from it, I would not stop your lives over it. I had a client that came in, a very nice lady, very smart lady, not hysterical, not weird. She had a 16-year-old dog to bring in, and this dog, it's a geriatric dog, you know, and so certainly more at risk than another dog would be from even kennel cough, right? So she actually came in without her dog first because she's so worried about this thing because of what she'd been reading. You know, this isn't just on, like, you know, in Pet Fancy or Dog Magazine. No, this is, like, on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. It's all over social media, and people are worried about it. And this otherwise completely well-adjusted lady was like, I'm just concerned. She needs to be seen by you, but I'm really worried. How bad's the risk? And I explained to her, I'm like, we're good. In Florida, we haven't seen anything. And honestly, dogs aren't really dying from this thing at any alarming rate whatsoever. So why don't you bring your dog in? And as a precaution, she came through the door straight into an exam room. So we didn't put her in the waiting room. When we checked her out, we have portable handheld credit card things. So we checked her out right in the room. And then she just signed right there and then left right out the door because she was duly concerned. And I honestly felt bad for her because in this day and age, things just get blown out of proportion. Believe me, if there was cause for concern and dogs were dying, let's say there was a distemper outbreak, for example. Distemper used to wipe out whole cities and towns of dogs before the vaccine came out. I'm gonna really let you know about that, not just my clients, but I'm going to get on the air here and I'm going to blog and I'm going to get that information out there. So just know if there's cause for concern, I'll be back on the air and I'll let you know. Right now, if you're not in a state that I have mentioned, it's not there. Believe me, CNN would let us know if it were. In the states where it is present, know that it's not likely that your dog's going to die from it. There could be a small percentage chance of a necessity for hospitalization just for some fluids and routine boost care, supportive care. Most of them will just go home on antibiotic and anti-inflammatory and be done with it. My dogs are still going to doggy daycare next door at Dogtopia. They just boarded there while I was on a cruise over the break. And so, you know, I'm going about life as normal. And I would advise all of you to do the same. Of course, exercise common sense, trust your kennel, trust the facility that you are taking your pets to if they do daycare, if they do boarding. When I say trust, I don't say implicitly trust. I'm saying do your diligence and know that they're trustworthy. Like next door, Dogtopia is literally adjacent to my clinic. They are so vigilant. The turnover of air is amazing. The cleanliness is amazing. I know that any dog that presents with respiratory anything, they're going to isolate that dog, make sure they're doing their diligence. I would guarantee they're going to find veterinary care immediately. So I know that my dogs are in great hands there, and I have that confidence. So I would like all of you to make sure you have that same confidence because they are not all created equal. If you have a Dogtopia near you, I would trust that franchise. The reason the owner of my local Dogtopia here in Vieira chose that particular franchise to open her dog business was because of the protocols in place. She found them to be the most resourceful and the most efficient and the safest. And so I really applaud that. So if you have a Dogtopia near you, you can rest assured they're following the same standards as the one here because they mandate that, which is pretty awesome. Not trying to be a commercial for Dogtopia, but I just can't tell you how much I appreciate them and what they do for this community and all of our dogs. And I'm being a little bit selfish, but what they do for my dogs, they are so happy when they're there. I watch them play on camera all day. Whenever I have a free minute between appointments, I just pop on the camera and I see them playing. They're not just sitting in a cage. and I know they're in the most capable hands. So, you know, I hope you have that same trust with your kennel or daycare. But that's the bottom line, guys. You know, don't fret so much. That the media is making this a little bit crazy. It is their job to make you tune in. It is their job to make you use their social media platforms. They get ratings, they get visits, they get views, and they make money from this. Are they lying? No. But are they being a bit sensationalist? Abso-freaking-lutely. You know, and that applies to anything. And I think we should take this as a lesson. You know, if there's something medical on the human side that we're worried about, talk to your doctor. If there's something veterinary, talk to me. Listen to the program. Talk to your veterinarian, your local veterinarian. We'll give it to you straight. We don't make money by being sensational. We earn our income by treating our patients. So it's not in our best interest whatsoever to get you unduly worried. In fact, we're overtaxed for the most part. Our profession is not putting out doctors fast enough, so we have a doctor shortage. We have a technician shortage, and so most of us are overwhelmed with cases. And so the last thing we need is mass hysteria and adding to that appointment book. So I appreciate everyone's business. I really do. But we're a bit saturated right now. So rest easy. It's going to be okay. If there's any information to get out to you, I will blog, I will podcast, and get you updated information. In the meantime, talk to your vet. Trust your vet, and maybe turn the TV off a little bit. Maybe lay off the Facebook a little bit. It's going to be okay. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. Please participate in the poll. These are things that are just very curious to me. I'd like to get more than two people. Until next time, everyone, have a great rest of your day.